Afternoon, everybody. Welcome everybody to September and the new year. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Howdy. Time to start. Whoa, whoa. Librarians are incredibly clever. I just noticed a novel use of a bookend that was a door prop. It was very interesting. No, I mean, but this was a metal one. This was a special one. It really worked anyway. I was very impressed. So I don't have a whole lot to say. I just want to mention that many of us were at the Hochschulaga Rock Memorial presentation, the moving of the rock, and a real celebration of McGill's interest, and particularly now with Indigenous studies, and is one of the major things that initiatives that Provost Manfredi is involved with. So that was kind of fun. I learned a lot, actually. That rock has been there since 1920 or so, and it waves at the base in the rock weighs something like 12,000 pounds. So to move it was quite a proposition. I'm not going to, because we actually have quite a lot today, and I'm going to be talking a lot because I'm subbing for people. I think I've just about talked about everything, that the big things that are going on. We are involved in a whole lot of events, and the Friends and the strategic group of the Friends planning group is really helping us a lot in fundraising, and we are doing a whole lot of things. Our friends are, this is the Library Friends, but they have a special group that is helping us with fundraising. And we are holding two events at individuals' homes to orient people, an invited group of people, to orient them and let them know about what's going on in libraries in the 21st century, and particularly about our plans for Fiat Lux. So this is, I think most people, all of you are pretty much familiar with these drawings now. These are the hand drawings of our architects. And Jay, I can never say his name, Verspich. Is actually Canadian, and he was the one who did the drawings for our project, and we used these as the invitations for this event. You notice that there is a little bit of artistic license here. You know, we move the mountain around a lot, and we do all sorts of things to have the bright views that we want from windows and stuff, but anyway, that's going on. Okay, and lots of other events that the Friends are doing. They are very, very, very busy people. One thing that we're doing on October the 18th, the Honorable Rosalie Abella will be here. There are only four Canadians. This is the F.R. Scott Lecture. There are only four Canadians who have received an honorary degree from Yale Law School. William Lyon Mackenzie King, Vincent Massey, Lester P. Pearson, and Rosalie Abella. In May of this year, she became the first Canadian woman conferred with this honor. I highly recommend you to listen to her Yale speech. It can be found on YouTube. And her life story and that of her family is remarkable, and the lecture should be one of the best. We hope, we anticipate it's going to be one of the best we've had. So RSVP, we know that it's going to be kind of we expect it to be overflowing. We may have to do something with televising it in a room close to Moise Hall, but in any case, this is really exciting, and the principal will be there to introduce her. Then we have the Friends of the Library Shakespeare Lecture. Graham Abbey will be speaking. He is a member of the Stratford Festival, Canadian film, television, stage actor, and director. He's been in over 30 Stratford productions. And he adapted the two-part play Breath of Kings, which was mounted this summer at Stratford. So November the 15th, RSVP again, if you'd like to come. And then we have a very, very special Friends of the Library annual general meeting this year. The Friend of the Year Award is going to be presented to the Joan and Clifford Hatch Family Foundation. And they are very, very, their daughters are very long time donors to the library. They've been very generous. Their foundation is terribly important to us. They actually started the Parents Fund, and the library is the main benefactor of that fund. It was started as a Parents Fund, with the library being the main benefactor. It exists to this day. We receive hundreds of thousands of dollars from this fund over time. There are many, many, many calls that, you know, that people are making at UA every year, University Advancement every year, to raise money for this program. And Gail Hodgem and Mary Hatch, McGill graduates and daughters of the late Joan and Clifford Hatch, will travel to Montreal from Toronto in order to attend the event and receive their Friend of the Year award. This is something that the Parents Fund, as I said, was started in 1963, and it was formed so that to forge a closer relationship between the university and parents. And we really hope that as many of you as possible can attend this. We really need to make a good showing at this to say thank you, because this money is used on an annual basis in just basic running of the library. It's hugely important to us. So that promises to be a great event as well. Okay. Okay, I'm also doing the HR update. I told you I was going to be up here a long time. Because Isabel is at a doctor's appointment. And this isn't her most fun thing to do, actually. Not that she doesn't like talking to you, but she's a little shy, actually, if you can believe it. A welcome to Natalie Cook, who's the Associate Dean for ROAR for the next 3 years. Rare Books, Osler, Art and Archives. William Belaski, we welcome him, and it's a documentation technician in ILL. Yay. Welcome. If any of y'all are here, please wave and stand up so we can show you to everybody, because there are several people who are looking in from a distance. Donna Gibbons. ILL as well. Liliana Ospina in Hustle. Is Liliana here? Yes. And on October the 3rd, Alvin Bomediano, IT production manager. Yeah. I think Jen's celebrating. Okay. We are really busy. As you know, we have posted several positions so that we could do some internal moving around if people were interested in doing something a little different. So we have lots of moving around. I'm sure this isn't the end of it. And this is going to be a challenge, because I get to pronounce some names that are going to be very interesting. Okay. I can handle Robin Canuel, who is now head librarian in Hustle. Michael Grunen, whatever. I can say the O-E. It sounds like an E. It's an umlaut, but the rest of it gets a little... his title is now Entrepreneurship Liaison Librarian. Dina Yanofsky, Data and Statistics, will be working a little bit more with data, but the two of them are also very much embedded in Research Commons and doing work with them too. Maggie Allen has moved from DI to be a senior library clerk in Hustle. Helen Kunsch-Jabahari Das, close? Yeah. Oh, well. Supervisor Receiving and Processing and Collection Services, Rosa Pellucci, Specialized Cataloging Editor in Collection Services, Linda Scott is, you won't see her when you come in the door anymore. She's a little bit behind the scenes, but enjoying things, and very happy to have her there. Cheryl Schmiel, ILL, and Janssen, Specialized Cataloging Editor in Collection Services. So you can't find people at the desks that you are used to finding them. Also true in the dean's office, you have to look around. Okay. Transition, Lauren and Michael are helping us out in different ways for the next little bit. HR update farewells, Sarah Holder, I think everybody knows, has gone to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Amber Lannon has moved on to Carleton, and Don Romano has also moved on to somewhere, I don't know. It's
starting a new business.
Okay, starting a new business. All right. Recruitment, soon to be finalized. The Associate Dean for User Services, we're waiting every day, hoping that will be finalized. A senior at the end of the recruitment is the senior library position in Hustle, and another documentation technician in ILL. At the interview stage, we're just marking these off on the calendar. The search committee has been very hard in a recruitment for a liaison librarian in Schulich. This is in the medical program, a senior library clerk in the Islamic Studies office. Even though this person has to be able to handle a lot of unusual language, language expertise is required. We have over 60 applications for that job. So we are getting many, many, many applications for every one of our jobs. And an HR advisor to an M1 to assist Isabel in HR, mainly because we're doing a whole lot of recruitment and a whole lot of things. Okay. Upcoming searches. User experience, a web librarian and digital initiatives. Two positions in application development. One LA for collection development and one LA for rare books cataloging. And this isn't it. This is just the next phase. And we've got many more positions that we still have to recruit for until we're finally fully staffed. I think that's, oh yes, okay. So service awards, is that another agenda item or am I still in the I'm still in the HR update. This is always a great event. It's going to be held on, it's the 48th edition of it. We will celebrate these 2016 inductees will be inducted into the Quarter Century Club at Redpath Hall on the 29th. Natalie Cook, Louis Ewell, Rosa Pellucci, and Yan Sun. So tell them congratulations when you see them. 2016 Service Awards recipients for 15 years of service are Lisa Barrett, Tatiana, Bajanian, Louis Ramon Wasso Mesa, Brian Prentice, Alessandra Scarcia, and Macy Zhang for 30 years, okay. Barbara Craig, Francis Alinti, Cynthia Levy, Mohammed Rahman, and Sharon Rankin. I think then we go to 35. Yeah, we keep going. Laura Kobayashi, Vinod Lepage, David Poliak, Brian Ramgadi. Yep, 40 years. Anna Del Balso, Joanna Hay, Valerie Maiman, Irene Wu. And we aren't done. 45 years. Louise Robertson and Faye Young, and really a sincere congratulations to all. I love adding up how many years all of this is in the end, and it's a lot. And we will have the ceremony that we always have at the next Dean's Corner, which should be on your calendars, December the 1st. And we'll be handing out pins. It's always fun to hand out the jewelry. And we'll have a little reception afterwards for people, too. Okay? So, I got to talk about all the fun stuff. Now Diane's going to talk about other fun stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good, thank you. Great. Thank you. Now, let's get this on.
Great. Well, welcome to our new members of the McGill family, and congratulations to the rest. I've had the great fun of working with some really wonderful people in renovating spaces here in McLennan and also in Schulich. So, for all of our newbies, if you haven't been over to Schulich, we'll give you a little walkthrough. And those of you that haven't been over to Schulich in a while, this will be fun to see some new study spaces. The spaces that we're about to show you were all of the funding came from primarily the SSMU Library Improvement Fund. Another chunk of money was provided from the AUS, the Arts Undergraduate Society. And a lot of people were involved in making this happen. I can't name all of you, but I do want to give a very special thanks to the Schulich team, who everybody was involved in what you'll see coming up. Well, first of all, 45,000 books were transferred out of two sections. Well, actually, from 45,000 books were transferred out of Schulich from two large areas. This is what the sections look like, just wall-to-wall stacks covering windows overlooking the beautiful campus. And so the books were selected carefully, thanks to the librarians and staff who did that, and moved out to the Curry Gym. And then every other book in Schulich was reorganized, and there's about 250,000 volumes remaining in Schulich, and there's about 300,000 volumes up in Curry. So a lot of book movement over the summer in that area. So we moved the books out, painted, new lighting, fresh wax on the floor. This is the fourth floor quiet study zone with electrified tables and a quiet, well-lit space for students to work. This is early in the term. You'll see every seat will be full starting from about now. And delighted to say that our colleagues in the visual arts, running the visual arts collection, have been working with us to get some beautiful art up on the walls. So great windows exposed, and that's facing the south window. The other window was overlooking the campus. So you have this wonderful brick, light, and art, plus space to study. Fifth floor, so that was the fourth floor, and it's a quiet study floor. The entire fifth floor is now group study. So this is the area that was completely filled with the material I just talked about. Electrified tables, there's about 60 seats just in this space. There were 47 on the fourth floor, so an additional 107 seats went into Schulich. We're now sitting at about 750 seats in Schulich now. So, the staff will tell you it's full from morning till night. This is the middle section. This was not renovated, but we cleaned. We had 300 chairs cleaned, and they look like new again. So we're delighted about that. Again, bricks, art, clean chairs. It's all good. The area that we had cleaned out, remember when the Schulich building had to undergo analysis for its masonry work, and they moved the walls in, and we lost seating to ensure that we had enough seats for our students in the slightly smaller footprint. We moved out books a few years ago, brought in desks. We've replaced those temporary desks with the desks and chairs that came from the Life Sciences Library, so we have a fresh fresh setup in that group zone. We also set up bookable pods that we created by installing whiteboards. So there aren't a lot of group study rooms in Schulich, and our students want group study rooms. So now we have group study pods, which they can book and work together in. Again, you'll see our life sciences furniture in there. And we've made a bookable pod with chalkboard paint to experiment to see how students like that versus whiteboards. So, now, the AUS funded the renovation of the lobbies in McLennan, the elevator lobbies. And this will be, there are four floors, four elevator lobbies that were renovated again with paint and carpets and new furniture that the students picked out. And I must say, those lobbies are now a really vibrant, buzzy space. It's wonderful. With a Brody chair from a supplier called Steelcase. Again, the students selected these chairs, and they're comparable to like a first-class seat in an airplane. They're really quite gorgeous. And, you can stash your bag, which of course everybody does in the bag spot. You can plug your laptop in, and they're super comfortable, and every seat's taken. And then as we come down through the floors, lots of electrified tables and movable furniture. So again, we have lots of bare walls that we'll work with visual arts on, with Sarah Severson and her plan to get some nice posters up and filling those spaces. So the other area that was worked on was the second floor of McLennan, I call it the map zone. We shifted the map cabinets towards the front, freeing up some wonderful space with electrified tables and lamps for quiet study. So there's 32 seats in there, which the students are flocking to. And I just want to point out that from 1969, these floors have just been amazing. So if you're wandering around McLennan, look down at the floors, because there's some gorgeous linoleum throughout, which really has stood the test of time, and the colors are now au courant. It's really wonderful. Another shot from that direction. And we're converting the production zone, what we call the production zone in the cyber tech. We've ordered stools so that these tables will become seats, and we've added benches along this wall. So every nook and cranny throughout all of our libraries are being converted into student spaces as they become available. And any questions about the students' involvement or what we've done? Yeah. Sorry?
No.
Okay. Good. How many new seats were added?
107 seats were added in Schulich, 32 in McLennan, 10 in CyberTech, and then all the seating in the elevator lobbies. There's probably 40 seats scattered throughout. Soft seating. And there was also additional seating created in Schulich, which we're using recycled furniture inside. So, yeah, good. The other thing I wanted to mention, and I've mentioned it, I think, in earlier meetings, there was all that work done in Schulich with the relocation of the collection. Lots of fabulous work done there. Similar work was done here in Hassel to alleviate the overcrowding of the stacks in McLennan. Fantastic job done by a lot of people. Robin can give me numbers on how much material was moved, but tens of thousands of books were moved. Yeah.
We're still moving too.
Yes. The project continues, and we've now closed the storage room in the basement of Redpath. That seems to have gone smoothly. And students are already, and faculty are commenting on how they appreciate having the breathing room in the stacks, starting on the fifth floor, I believe.
Six.
Good. Great. Any other questions? Work continues. Thank you. Who's next? Oh, good.
Before we turn this over, we're going to have a talk about some of the cool stuff that's going on in the library. From time to time, we'll just have this sort of talk to keep you up to date with what some of our colleagues are doing. But before we do that, I just wanted to know if there were any other questions about anything that's going on in your lives or that you wonder about. Okay, with that, I'm going to hand it over to the Jane and Sarah show here. And these are our colleagues from DI. And
start.
You don't have to do anything with that. It's already on.
Oh, okay, great. Just have to do this. Okay. So anyway, we're just actually here today. Do I have to? I thought I could get away with holding it. No? Okay. So we just wanted to talk a little bit about the Retro Thesis Project today. The reason being is that we're actually finished it. So if you go into the first slide, this was a project that was actually announced in 2011, and I found the original announcement. It was Dean's Corner number 5. I actually watched it. So you stood up, it was in Bronfman, and you said that the big plan was we were going to make sure that all theses at McGill were going to be open access and electronic. So announced it in 2011. 2012, we started going, and we're actually finally finished. And so we were, in the end, it was almost 7,000 theses that we digitized here in-house, and that almost amounted to 1 million pages. I really kind of want to find, like, another 20 theses just so that we can get those numbers over 1 million. And then this is just a picture of what the stacks look like. So in 2012, we just started going up to the stacks, and we would take 1 year off the shelf in rare books, and we bring it into the lab, we digitize it, and then go back. And so we've just been kind of systematically doing this all through the years. And so now we are at the state of the next slide, which is almost 42,000 theses are in e-scholarship now. And they are also all in the catalog, so I've checked that. And they're all findable in electronic. And so we have our earliest one, which is 1833, which is from the medical school. It's William Logie or Logie, I'm not sure. Logie, okay, thank you, Gordon. And so that's way over there. We've got 1881 is the next one after that. And then you start to see kind of peaks and valleys all the way up. The reason I'm really actually presenting this is because we want to do a big publicity outreach kind of promotion of this amazing collection now to the faculty, to alumni, and we want your help. So the first thing we're going to do is we're looking for the stories inside this collection of who these people are, what they've been doing. So the first step is we're going to be opening up the metadata and hopefully the full text. I'm still checking with our copyright librarian on that. So that people can actually kind of discover and play around with it. So we're going to be doing some data visualizations ourselves and playing around. I invite you to ask any of your faculty if you know anybody else, if you would like to play around with it. I've got a bunch of XML files just this morning. So that's the first step. And then the next step is going to be looking at the other stories, which Jane's going to talk a little bit more about.
I think a lot of people might not realize how important theses are to scholarship and how people are increasingly finding and using them for their own research and advancing their own research. And, of course, McGill is no exception. And not only do we have many theses written by very notable graduates that we want to share for people to see, I started digging around, and I found if every one you find is really interesting if you're interested in the topic or the person. So I just pulled out two notable graduates. One is Harriet Brooks. In 1909, you may not know her. That's a photo of her at the top there. She was a nuclear physicist. She graduated with an MA in physics, and I think maybe then a PhD in 1903 in physics. She was really studying nuclear physics, and she went on to go to Europe and worked under Marie Curie to continue her studies. And as a woman researcher in such a very male-dominated field, it's fascinating to know that she came from McGill and she was studying this. So it was radon, she was trying to determine atomic mass. So I don't know how much of the we can blame her for the atomic bomb, but maybe. Yeah, she did. She did. Yes. Evan Solomon, another bad guy last year. He graduated from religious studies here at McGill in 1992. Who wants to know what he did his thesis on? He studied the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Religious elements in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So wouldn't that be fun to go and read that? So I encourage you to dig it out and have a look at that. We're planning on tweeting him during Open Access Week and telling him we've got his Twitter feed, and hopefully he'll share that out to others. But that's just the fun stuff when you've got notable people, but there's a lot of really interesting topics inside the research that our former graduates were studying, and you can just go down this massive rabbit hole as I did. Wilfred Emerson Israel, he published this thesis in sociology that I've just screen captured there in 1928 on the Montreal Negro. And he was really interested in what was going on in terms of the Montreal Negro community here. And he was studying clubs. One club was actually called Nem de Relock, which is the word colored men spelled backwards. And these were all just down the hill, down mountain in Little Burgundy. I think it's Little Burgundy or Griffintown down there. They've all been demolished now, and big condos have been built, probably where Jen lives and where Joseph lives. Elizabeth Peel Annisfield in 1961 and 1964, she was doing her degrees in psychology here, and she was studying language and bilingualism, and actually her thesis was on whether or not you are more intelligent if you are bilingual. And guess what? You are. And she published many books after that, and including along with her thesis advisor, studying bilingualism and how important that is. You can go on and on and on. So what I would like you to do, next slide, is to go in and see what you can find and help us find some stories. So we want to do a companion website for celebrating these theses that are there and get our alumni to look into them, but we want to sort of have a slideshow of examples of things that we find. And there's so many different topics. I think with the Montreal celebrations coming up, there are, if you just limit your search in e-scholarship to the subject as Montreal, you'll find lots and lots of lots really interesting early Montreal. Yeah, questions?
National Security Advisor,
about an MA from Yale.
What did he do?
I certainly cannot tell you.
We're going to have to find it.
But you'll find it in the scholarship. And there actually there's a couple of the Nobel Prize winner from a couple of years ago in biology. Mm-hmm.
There are lots. We started a page on the intranet. You can type search retro theses. And I've started just going down that rabbit hole of finding interesting ones. Or we've got a list of famous or notable McGill graduates, and we're kind of doing a correspondent. We're looking in the
features all of the faculties, which is one of the reasons we really wanted to bring it to you guys, is in your faculty, you know these people, and just bring them up to the surface for the future.
Marika told us the other day, we were meeting with her as we were trying to help talk about publicity, and she said, you've never gotten a story in the alumni news.
Not the magazine.
And we
not
want this to be the one.
This
could
be the one.
So we would like this because we think this is something our alumni will be interested in.
I was just wondering, with the metadata that you're going to be making available, what format, and will there be the capacity for batch export?
So I just got the files today from Elizabeth, and currently it is...
So I just picked up the files today, and right now what we have is XML files for each individual record with a PID, and it's got the DC fields and stuff. So after that, we don't really know. I think we're going to be roping in Branica to help out and to kind of clean it up and just see what we can do, but we'll provide it to anybody in the RAS format. So yeah.
But it would be on one record at a time.
Right now, that's what it is, but I'm sure we could probably batch it.
Is it on a server that's set up that we could potentially run some scripts that you'd be running as well?
Well, I've got all of the OCR text right now on HTML files. Like, we've got it dumped, so we could maybe create that. And we could do that. But yeah, I literally just got them today, so I'll kind of share them and we can start. I want to start exploring those ideas now and see what we can kind of produce for this website. But one of the big things I want to make sure is that other people know that they can also just play with the data as well, and so that it is available to anybody. One of the ideas that we had for the website was to actually show a couple example projects, but then see if we can actually drum up some interest. Because, like, even just looking at that graph, we saw so many dips and valleys, and there's so many interesting questions just in that of, like, well, why to go down here, and I want to see it by faculty. I want to see how the different ones go up and down, and, you know, it could be really interesting.
A lot of theses in different eras had accompanying files, like 5 1/4 inch floppy disks and
yes.
such things. So what you've done about those is that, I mean, they're archival copy, but many of them have audio files, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. They're definitely not part of the data dump right now. Right now, it's only the full text that we were able to extract from digital. In terms of whether or not they're in digital, I actually am not. They weren't really necessarily part of our like digitization project. We only ended up finding like one kind of subsection that had files like that in the old stuff.
There's lots that had it. I mean, not so long ago, we had to find a machine in the basement of Burnside.
In terms of the multimedia, I don't think we've got anything in there right now, and I know that we're really working with the music faculty to try to figure out how we can do a better job at getting music or other kind of multimedia in there.
I do know Greg did digitize other things that appeared inside of Theses, so as they were getting digitized, they would find things inserted, and he did digitize those, and there was a big, long map. How big was that?
So
like, it was open. And did that? That's probably in there. I'm not sure. It wasn't necessarily the thesis, but it was an addendum to the thesis. And those things are in there. And there's wonderful. If you get into some of them, you can see they're annotated. This is typewriter days, right? We're talking, and so people didn't necessarily type up their thesis again when they had changes to make. They just kind of penciled them in, and some there's advisor comments on the side. So they're really kind of interesting on that note as well.
Can you guys say a little bit more about your time frame for doing the outreach and, you know, if people in the room are interested and they go off the kinds of cool stuff, how we can work with you to get that included?
Thank you. I think what we were going to say right now is send them mostly to Sarah. I think Sarah or me, you can send little quick messages to us. We've got that intranet site set up. We would like to have ourselves ready for some sort of launch for Open Access Week, which is also homecoming week. So the two together just dovetail so nicely this year. And then from there, to get into alumni news, that's a different calendar. We missed this fall, obviously. Marika, when do you think we'll need it for that?
We need some juicy stories, and then we pitch them our juicy stories, and then they say yes.
So we got to get some juicy stories. If we can get them by October, the end of October, that's great. But we'll keep, you know, I think they're going to keep coming because I think it's just a gold mine of really fabulous stuff.
Anybody can edit the internet page. Yeah.
Say two.
Go back to the graph with the pine.
Oh yeah.
See, I was looking at the street.
Hang on.
So I can hear. I have a session where I ask people.
Yeah. So you can see the First World War. You can see it go down right here. And you can see the Second World War. But this is the one I was struggling with.
It's
why 1979?
1979.
What happened there?
Migration.
76.
Yes.
That was our what was it?
Yeah, December 76.
We had a referendum on the
Exodus.
Okay.
The beginning of the brain drain.
Yeah.
And
what happened in 2007?
So we think that this might be when electronic theses were brought in, like this idea that you could submit an electronic theses, and before it was only print, and so that maybe that was, we don't know, but it could be when they graduated and master.
So do you have electronic theses too?
Yeah, okay. This is all electronic.
Interesting. I find this really, really interesting. It's not.
And this is 350 jump. Yeah, it's a significant jump. So it's not an interesting. And 1933 is when we first hit 100. So, I mean, the important thing to kind of just maybe remember too is that before. I mean, I don't know exactly when it would start, but those early numbers is only the theses that are in the library. It's not the theses of the people that graduated. You know, there is this kind of idea of we weren't the central depositing location anymore. This is something I'm hoping to actually get for the site, is maybe a little bit of a history of just kind of the process of theses at McGill, because it did really change over the years. I know with the medical school, they used to take their own theses, and it was their own library. And there was a concentrated project maybe 10 years ago or something where we went out to all of these individual little libraries and tried to make sure to recoup them all. But, you know, it isn't necessarily exactly the numbers of people who graduated, so...
Student, and you had to complete, and I don't know if it was maybe around 2,000.
What I see is not the dip, I see the rise. I see the rise. Like, all of a sudden, everybody rushed to finish.
Yeah, it's like you had to complete your degree by a certain date.
That's what I'm saying. You got rushed to graduate, and then, of course, a bunch of people went early, and that made that dip low. Mm-hmm.
It's the year that the thesis, was submitted, the cohort,
Okay, so the financial crisis was important for that year, because that was the year that
It was 2007.
Yeah. I see a rush to the it's 2008. Well, they stayed in school.
Yeah, usually.
I have this as an Excel spreadsheet, if anybody wants it. Yeah, that's true, I'll just put it on the internet.
And you know what, even this, we don't know it by discipline, it may just be...
Oh yeah, this was a really quick endeavor for this presentation in a day. This was just like dumped a bunch of numbers.
It was fascinating. Yeah. I was looking at it.
We need to get around it in there.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's all we have. So.
Yeah. That's great. Now I'll have to come up with something else like that to do. So thank you very much. That's kind of fun. Questions? Does anyone have any questions? Thoughts? Yes, we're trying to figure out, okay, whose thumbs are those? So when do we get our 8,000 books published before 1850 out of the stacks? Robin. Robin. Okay. Yoo-hoo. When do we get our 8,000 books published before 1850 out of stacks?
Oh, well, that depends on a lot of things.
Okay.
So I can't answer that. But it's starting. It's all I can say is it's starting. It's officially started.
It's officially started. And the first batch is kind of a willy-nilly. Like, we're at the mercy of cataloging, right? So if the record is great, it can go right away. But if it's terrible, you've got to fix it.
Okay.
Also, that's just the first step. They're also planning to bring in the new team that you might remember also.
Interesting. It's cool, though. Okay, so anybody have anything else they have a question for or whatever? We are going to try to do these systematically. I think it's 4 times this year. And the next one is on December the 1st, and... we're just, even if we don't have a whole lot to talk about, we're going to do it. So put it on your calendar and be there. Okay? Thank you very much, and welcome to everybody.